Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And oh my gosh, we are going to have a heck of a discussion today. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I've been doing this a really long time. Actually, I was doing it before we had podcasting. I was on the radio. I've had a lot of absolutely fabulous guests, and I'm not pulling your leg on this one. When I read my guest bio, I was like, wow, just a little bit intimidated because it is such an impressive bio. So first of all, please join me in welcoming Dr. Anthony Simmons to our program today. Welcome, Dr. Simmons. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
Perfect. Well, let me go ahead and tell people about you, and then we'll jump into this. So hailing from Goodwater, Alabama, where he graduated valedictorian and an all-state football player, Dr. Anthony Simmons is a retired Navy captain who served 28 years as a surface warfare officer, where he commanded three ships and a destroyer squadron. He also worked in human resources and in the Pentagon on the staffs of the Chairman and Joint Chiefs and Naval Operations as a strategic planner and resource officer. He is the author of the book, Champion Organization Wellness, a thorough and enlightening guide to help leaders to coach and train future leaders. He holds a doctorate degree in strategic leadership from Regent University, a master's in mechanical engineering from Naval Postgraduate School, a master's in military operational art and science from Air University, and a bachelor's degree in robotics from Austin Peay State University. He is a member of the Austin Peay's Military Hall. I knew when I said it was wrong. He is a member of the Austin Peay's Military Hall of Fame class of 2023. And not, you know, because he's not done yet, he is the founder and president of Sixth Gear Consulting LLC. Well, first and foremost, Dr. Simmons, thank you for your service. You know, this is just incredibly impressive, and I am so honored to have you.
Thank you. What an honor to be here.
Well, you know, I always like to know how it is that people got to where they are today. So tell us a little bit more about it.
It starts with the foundation and surrounding yourself with the right people, just watching people that have done greatness in life, and just identifying and appreciating your gifts. Mm-hmm. And I was always curious. I'd like to thank my parents, the late Donald Simmons and Mary Simmons. He was married for 58 years. I lost my father a couple of years ago, but they worked hard together to sacrifice, you know, for their kids. I was the middle kid of five. And I had one brother, an older sister, and two younger sisters there. And we had a really strong family tree there with my uncles. And we spent a lot of time farming. I didn't tell a lot of people that I grew up in the summer, mostly farming. And in wintertime, we did a lot of logging. And I had a really strong work ethic and a sense of responsibility that was instilled in me. And then I coupled that with the community. Goodwater was a working class community, and people embraced each other, looked out for the betterment of the kids. And last but not least, you will see as I dedicated my book to the late Mr. Robert J. Armour. He was the principal there at Goodwater. I had Mr. Armour from all the way through school. I had him for 11 years.
I love it.
Yeah. So he had to go through a Supreme Court system in Alabama to get the principalship out of high school. So it was a moratorium that was held when I transitioned over from the elementary school over to the, back then it was junior high and high school. So he had both the junior high and high school. And he just always saw a lot in me, and he invested in me. And Mr. Armour went to Fisk University up in Nashville, Tennessee. And he father asked him to come back to Alabama and, you know, as an educator, and he made that sacrifice to come back and, you know, instill and invest in the community. And I started a scholarship in his name, the Robert J. Alma Morgan Scholarship. So,
oh, I love it.
Yeah. So, and I authored it, and I worked with his family and some other civic leaders there. So that was it. It was just underpinning the foundation and having people that had a vested interest in me.
So why'd you decide to have a career in the Navy?
Oh, that's always very interesting. You know, I was, when I went back to Austin Peay Military Hall of Fame, it was the guy there, Ted Crozier, Jr. He was there. When I was at Austin Peay, his dad, Ted Crozier Sr., was the mayor of Clarksville. Mm-hmm. But Ted Crozier Sr. was the commander at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And I was once reading Colin Powell's book, and he worked Ted Crozier Sr. when he was in at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. But anyways, I always would see the ROTC unit there, Army only. We didn't have Navy.
Okay.
Had a couple of teammates that was in the unit, and they recruited me heavily. And I had zero interest in the military.
Okay.
And I was all about, you know, just trying to do well academically. And but even though they did pursue me because I was doing pretty well in school.
Right. Like, yeah. They want those strong academics.
And they like athletes as well. So anyways, I went back this fall and he was like, how did we miss you? I said, you guys didn't. You tried. But after I finished college, what happens when you, that's why I really have kids who look close to when you do sports and athletics. Mm-hmm. We focus, you know, on the athletic aspect of it. And I just didn't do much in the off season to really grow my portfolio, you know, about work experience or what have you. Mm-hmm. And so I graduated. I had a lot of education, but was not qualified, you know, for taking on some of the jobs that I had envisioned. And I had some friends, primarily my fraternity brothers from Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. I went to a convention with that at Tallahassee, Florida, and I met a lot of guys out of Redstone Arsenal up in Huntsville that happened to be career Army officers. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you need to do it with your background is you just need to join the military for at least 4 years and bolster your credentials, get some experience there. And then things will be a lot, you know, got a lot better. You have a lot more opportunities, especially with you not doing a co-op, no intern. So I took that on board and I just happened to be reading the paper one day when I was at Goodwater. I was doing some community stuff, primarily working with the student athletes around the town. And I read the newspaper. It said, join Navy Aviation. All you need is 2 years of education.
Ah.
And so I called on them and a 2.5 grade point average.
Mm-hmm.
So I called
and you
on,
definitely had that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I called out to Montgomery Recruiting Center down there and I keep this short. So the guy I talked with, he was like, what's your credentials? I said, oh, man. He said, well, you qualify for the nuclear engineering program in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a trip down to Charleston, South Carolina, and did all the requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So there's another guy in the recruiting office that was a recruit for surface warfare. So I had a surface warfare recruit and a nuclear type recruiter. They was like tag teaming me. They was so like calling
me. They weren't letting you out.
Yeah, they was like calling me behind each other back. So and I said that nuke stuff's a little much, you know, and the nuclear because it mostly was submarine types, and I decided I didn't want to have much to do with that.
So you won't be above the water.
Exactly. So when I learned about the surface community, I said, okay, why not give it a try? In fact, the guy chased me down. He came to my hometown. Goodwater is about 45 minutes to an hour, and he was somewhat, and it's small. It was about 3,000 people back then. Now it's only probably 1,500 people.
Ooh.
And everyone was, hey, Simmons, you know, this guy in his white car with Navy on it riding around looking for you. I was sort of dodging him, you know. I was. Mm-hmm. It was a Friday. Who wants to go down to Montgomery? And I had to take the officer aptitude rating exam. Mm-hmm. I said, well, what got me? He said, well, you come down and take the exam. You don't have to sign up, you know. You can quit anytime. Just at least take the exam.
Just see. Then,
that's another step. So now it's January. Mm-hmm. Long story short, I was enrolled at Officer Cannon School, Newport, Rhode Island. So then that's how that started. So and I call it blind luck. With some people say, oh, it was your destination. So it worked out. So that's how it really came about. So the gentleman name was Preston Jenkins, and I always remember him to this day. He was a Navy Surface Warfare officer as well.
So
that's how
it.
The Navy came about. Yeah,
I love it. You know, and It's obviously an extremely distinguished career, and the stories you could probably tell when we weren't recording, you know, right? But it is, you know, you're when I'm thinking about the military, One of the things, and I was thinking about this as I was reading your book, which again is called Championing Organization Wellness. I don't get enough letters in there. Championing Organization Wellness was, you know, we always think of the military and any branch pretty much. And for now, my father was Army. But we always think of the person in charge. And notice I'm not saying leader. The person in charge says jump. And everybody says, how high? But you are so much more than that because you were a leader. And I loved reading the foreword in your book from someone who had served under you, and he described what you were like as a leader. So kind of tell us a little bit about how that came about, because you really were such an inspiration to those who served under you.
Yeah, that was Command Master Chief Leon Walker, and he was my senior enlisted advisor there in the USS Lasso, my head command, and I still talk with him quite often. Such a great guy, so I definitely want to, you know, attribute that to him, and he really was a key to my success story. You know, I like the way you talk leadership. I'm into servantship, you know, I coined that term. Because we oftentimes talk about, well, I'm a servant leader, this and that. But I say, no, that's sort of a paradoxical, you know, somewhat of a oxymoron, if you will. And that's, so it's all about serving people. And that's, you know, making the investment to make those around you better. We have to look at our makeup, who we really are as people in life. And I always find myself throughout my formative years, and primarily in Pop Warner football, I was always a quarterback, and I was a point guard in high school in basketball. I played quarterback on the football team, but because of my size, I'm only 5'8". I said,
You were not going to be a linebacker.
Nor a quarterback, because I was not tall enough. So I always try to move over to the running back position, but coaches said, nope, you're going here. And then basketball, I always wanted to shoot the ball, and I didn't want to be the floor leader because I just want to, you know, catch it and shoot it. He said, nope, you're going to the one. You're the point
guard. You're the point guard.
Yeah. So, and what that boils down to is how you really influence people. You know, we used to be in a world of command and control. And Stephen M. Covey, I know I just wrote a book recently about trust and inspire. You know, I've always read his father's book, Seven Habits of How to Expect Effective People. But it's all trust and inspire. It's all about how do you breathe into people, life into people. You make them better, you know, from working with who they are. And I have a couple of teammates. In fact, I have from high school. I was talking to one this week here, and he was a sophomore. And you know, we always have challenges when you have people surrounding you. Some people just have tons of talent, but don't always realize how talented they really are. And I always felt I could just encourage people and just get the best out of them. And I see how those stories, you know, today when I impacted, you know, those people in those moments of influence. So I thought that was always the best. I thought it was my innate ability to really teach. I do my Clifton Strength Finders. And, you know, I'm a lifelong learner. And also I was built to teach, you know, and work with people. So it's just a gift I have. And it was just me realizing it. And the Navy gave me the platform, you know, to pursue higher education and to work with people across, you know, different landscapes, cultures, and what have you. In addition to traveling in over 63 countries, engaged in different countries and doing it. Team building, what have you. So I just, everything just been a joy, and stuff that I had a chance to do, it just really cultivated who I really am as a person. So that's why my vision on being a servant.
I love that. You know, and you definitely are what I would define as a leader, because several of the things, you know, lifelong learner, you know, helping those who are, you know, around you, being that servant, because there is a very big difference to me between being the person in charge and a leader. Now, it can be the same person, but, you know, it is so interesting. I mean, clearly you were a leader from, you know, when you were little, because the quarterback and the point guard are the leaders of the teams, at least for the offense. So you didn't know you're talking to somebody who knew her sports. but you know, it is something that, you know, my thought was, you know, you had such a good role model when you were younger that really did set the tone, and you know, in your principle, because it was, I think it is such a challenge for any young person to kind of get lost. But when they have a teacher, a principal, a minister, whoever, who is kind of that guiding light, it makes such a difference.
Yes, and I would say I add a little to that story. Speaking of my principal there, I remember sports, and we always felt that, he doesn't like athletes. You know, he just makes it so hard for us. He changed the criteria in sports, you know, from having a D to be able to play, everyone had to have a C. And ooh, not only that, he changed the grading scale. Mm-hmm. You know, it was no longer a 70. It was like, I think 74 was a requirement.
Ah, he's making you earn it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that was like, oh man, this is, but what it did also, it forced me and other teammates to help the ones that, mm-hmm, that was not so right, academically right, inclined. Mm-hmm. So we had to, you know, it just taught us leadership. It taught us the importance of education more so than anything. And our high school had that reputation, you know, for, mm-hmm, being a student and then, mm-hmm, athlete next. So we kept that balance there. And the guys in my era did pretty well, you know, because, mm-hmm, of, you know, what he invested in us. So I thought that was found that to be very, you know, mm-hmm, distinguished in that, mm-hmm, regard.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I love that. You know, and we didn't talk about this before the program, but I went to the University of Colorado, and we have a really shiny coach there, right? So we have Deion Sanders, who is the coach. And even though I'm in Atlanta, we still have our season tickets. You know, we're just that type of fan. And he has been so impressive to me because of his philosophy on how he is leading that team. And, you know, one of the things that you know, he said multiple things, but, you know, like when his very first meeting with the players, he told him, he said, now, you all are student athletes, and you will remember that because most of you will not turn pro. You know, most of them are not his son, right? But he said, most of you will not turn pro. He said, so my job is to turn you into, or help you to develop into, young men who will, you know, lead beneficial, successful lives. And he said, so y'all will sit in the front rows of your classes and you will participate and we will do pop inspections. And he said, but more importantly, he said, it's on me too. You know, the coach, you know, Coach Prime, as they call him, right? He said, if anybody wants to know the GPA of any of my players, I will know it. He said, because I think it's that important. And it came out a couple of weeks ago that he had received a couple emails from teachers who were not happy with his players. And he called a team meeting and he called those kids out by name. And he said, this is not acceptable. You know, when I have teachers saying you are disruptive, you're this, you're that, it's not acceptable. He said, you are young leaders of your communities. And he said, you know, you will toe the line. And I loved that because, you know, he really is now, you know, he's got these really flashy sons, right? The one that flashes his $90,000 Rolex and drives up in the Rolls. But that kid is, he knows. I mean, like he has said, I'm a student first, you know, especially, you know, a pro athlete, your career is pretty limited. And so you have to be able to go on after that. It is almost in some ways kind of like the military. I mean, you know, many people, when they serve, they don't serve for, you know, they don't turn it into a lifetime career. They serve and then they go on to something else. So it's, what are those skills that you're learning there that are going to carry on into life?
I have two pieces that connect to what you're saying there. Mm-hmm. First of all, my daughter plays basketball for Longwood. She's a freshman here. The head coach at Longwood's good friends with, mm-hmm, the lady that happens to be the associate director of academics at Colorado.
Ooh. Oh,
so
I
was at a game and I saw this, mm-hmm, Colorado. I said, why we got these Colorado sweatshirts on? Mm-hmm. And her friend says, it's not me, it's her. So I talked with her and it was like, yeah, I'm associate. And I said, well, I got another friend from Austin P. That, mm-hmm, he's over player development. Mm-hmm. She said, no, you're kidding me. And so I threw his name.
It's a small world.
And she said, let me FaceTime it. So I have two contacts there, but it's going to academics. I just read a John Thompson book recently. I Came as a Shadow. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, that book was so breathtaking. And, you know, he was at Georgetown. You could imagine Georgetown University, mm-hmm. Washington, D.C., you know, a lot of kids mm-hmm. from certain demographics, you know, some people come from socially maybe challenged, you know, backgrounds mm-hmm. and socioeconomically challenged. And how did they really matriculate mm-hmm. at Georgetown? So he managed all of that. He was one of the first programs to implement what we call your academic advisor. Mm-hmm. And it was someone he actually met at one of the high schools there. Because he held kids to a high standard when he was teaching high school there. And he was trying to get the kid to come to practice. No, they stand behind because they're not mm-hmm. on top of their academics. So when he got the job at Georgetown, who better to hire than that mm-hmm. particular lady?
Right, and Georgetown ain't nothing to sneeze at.
Exactly. So that was, and that is so critical. That's why it troubles me now with some people, kids not putting the emphasis on, you know, academics and athletics and keeping their perspective. I always felt going to school to play college sports, there's time management, a lot of lessons mm-hmm. to be learned there. But I always felt that you go there to get education, as you said, not many people are going to go to the next level. In fact, I had a teammate that went to the Redskins as a free agent. You know, he was like 6'6", 320 pounds. We left school in January and got 12 reps while he was the Redskins. He got pushed back there. And he had a kid. And he was stacking the shelves at Walmart at night. And that was it. And he had missed the opportunity to graduate that spring. Mm-hmm. So I knew then, you know, that's just really high risk. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, you know, you really have to, I said, going there playing football, that's my job. Mm-hmm. But going to school, getting my lesson, that's my paycheck. Mm-hmm. So yep. I got to walk away with a degree. So, you know, if you don't go to class and focus on your school, that's like going to work without picking up your paycheck mm-hmm. on Friday. So that, right. that was how I summed it up, you know. So mm-hmm. and then Austin Peay was on, we was all on degree programs, mm-hmm. which I enjoyed. And that was, you know, sort of unheard of, you know, in the mid 80s. You know, you just mm-hmm. couldn't go there and take any class just mm-hmm. to stay eligible. You, right. once you after you're there for 2 years, had to be headed towards a degree. Mm-hmm. So I really credit Austin mm-hmm. Peay a lot to that regard.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you and I could have a totally different discussion about NIL. I'm just,
Same here.
But I can also understand, you know, I wish that, and, you know, I digress. I wish that college sports hadn't become so much like a business, but it has.
Yes.
But, you know, it also, schools have the opportunity to still, you know, show those kids financial planning classes, things like that. I worked with a former CU football player who lives here in Georgia now on, you know, and he'd hoped to turn pro and didn't. Now he's, you know, he's played some in some of the other leagues, but, you know, was just not going to be in the cards for him. Played safety in a year when there were far too many safeties that turned pro. And, you know, but I worked with him on his LinkedIn profile and he was telling me, he said, you know, oh yeah, we had people who came in to, you know, to the athletic department and everybody, you know, all the student athletes were supposed to attend. And he said, but it was like at 9 o'clock at night because, you know, just they had such long, busy days. He said, so we didn't pay attention, you know, and you hear about these kids now, you know, who are making the money. And, you know, somebody like Caitlin Clark, she's going to have a good financial planner, right? Because she's got a pretty good head on her shoulders. But so many other kids don't have that. And, you know, and I think it's, you know, it's important that the universities teach them, you know, here's how to do financial planning and things like that.
That's true. That's, you know, I got to tell my daughter, she plays and they get a stipend and, mm-hmm. and she get other benefits. And, you know, she did really well in high mm-hmm. school.
Of course she did.
And but I just tell her, you know, just don't develop any past spending mm-hmm. habits. Life is about a progression, you know, because right. we have to, you know, keep that in mind. So mm-hmm. I teach her that, you know, you actually, how much money do you think you really need, mm-hmm. you know, for a lifestyle? Just mm-hmm. don't spend it because it's there. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And she appreciates it, but a lot of, I say that because I've seen just the opposite with a lot mm-hmm. of kids, you know, it ain't what you make, it's how you really manage it. So, yeah, so we can pick up some bad habits mm-hmm. that's short-lived, you know, it's mm-hmm. hard to sustain, you know, certain amount of pay scale. And I did the same in the military, you know, mm-hmm. I kept my lifestyle, you know, throughout, you know, even mm-hmm. as my rank increased there. And mm-hmm. to this day, you know, I just don't have many challenges mm-hmm. because of the way I, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty much a steward of my, you know, right. my dollars. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's learning all of that, whether it's, you know, mom, dad, the military, your coaches, all of those learning how to be a good grown-up is maybe the easiest way to put that.
That's true.
But we don't get that, you know, and so, you know, but you, and it's funny because as I was thinking about this, I was thinking again about your book where, you know, you are talking about leadership, but you also talk in the book about how important it is to actually coach people. And that is, you know, how you are working with them to help them better themselves. And you talk about the, you know, so talk about that and then talk about the triangle of, you know, of that you have in your book that you discuss.
You know, first, I'm going to touch the foundational pieces. And it's about self-assess, you know, look at, you know, what some of the opportunities I had. Also, I've had challenges. And with that in life, it comes a lot of trial and error. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important part. And in order to grow and help other people, first, you got to continue to grow in yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's the foundational piece. And I use this coaching training relation. Some people get my book screwed because they see a pyramid. I said, no, it's not a pyramid. It's an equal-sided triangle. We've always used triangle in navigation to fix ship's position.
And right. Get those. That's how you knew where you were, right?
Mm-hmm. Is that 100% accurate? So I always look at where we're in life. You know, we got the trifecta, right? We have, you know, use the word leader. I call them leaders, leadership coach. Then you have aspiring leaders. I don't believe in followers. You know, we're in a world of co-equals, not people want to go and do things. Then you look at the organization. So you want to impact all of it, you know? So this whole championing organizational wellness, how do you come up with this term? It's based on experience. Throughout the Navy, there's been tons of initiatives. Going back to the Admiral Zoom walk back in the 70s, he put mechanisms or tools in place to help diversify the Navy, make opportunities for everybody. I had leaders, I'm going to call his name. I got my Mike Mullen. You'll see him, me on a bit picture with him when I worked on the Joint Staff. Probably the best leader I ever had. You know, he came out of Hollywood. His father, you know, was when you help people promote.
An agent.
Yeah, not an agent. It was another one. When you work directly with people, I can't. And not a journalist, but one of those terms.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But I it slipped me right. He worked in Hollywood, so Emma Mullen was always really big on pushing opportunities for everybody, you know, across everything and developing and growing. He was a natural coach as well. So I looked at those opportunities. Then when you have certain leadership come in, they throw those tools out the window. They said, no, everybody got to make it on their own. There's a fair organization on the initiatives, you know, to inspire and encourage the environment for everyone. So we always got this ebb and flow. People always doing organization development, but how do we sustain that? What tools we put in place to keep those initiatives in place that don't have an ebb and flow? So that whole triangulation was built on wellness. This is the combination of organization development plus organization sustainment. So that gives you organizational wellness. And what this triangle does, it puts you in where you have to identify who you are as a person. And then you have to look at your blind spots, you know, the out person, you know, versus the want self. And then you get through that. And then you on this right side of that triangle, you have the aspiring leader and left side. Then how did you connect? You know, like I always told people when I was a leader that halfway is not the same for everyone. It depends on their background, their status, you know, what resources they had access to. So you had to go a little further. Sometimes halfway, maybe I would just someone's front door. You don't know. Only requirement I have is for you to be willing to get off the porch. Okay. So as long as you're willing, I'm okay. I can come all the way to you. I'll do it. I can grab you. So that's fine. So you do that through once you determine where you are and find your location by assessing who you are and bettering yourself. And that's going to be continuous because generations change, cultures change, you know, the landscape, we're in the virtual world. So you got to continue to self-assess. They each come through that, you know, all self. But we say, what is, you know, there's a certain thing based on ethics, right? So sometimes, you know, the irony is, your ethnicity is your beliefs and your values. What if you dealing with someone across another group? And America is full of microcosm of culture. So we have to be sometimes meet people on their terms and their ground. So then you have a coaching conversation and that allows you to really connect, not yes and no questions. You know, you have to ask open-ended questions to do intuitive listening. So we're trying to let that person draw out their own introspective and let you know, and let them identify. It's almost like inspiring them, breathing life into them. And after that, they say, how do we get here? You know, as a group here, you have to suspend judgment. And then they design the course of action. Then you set, then you commit to supporting them once they design the course of action. So once that's the foundational piece at the bottom of that triangle, which is self-assessing, you know, overcoming blind spots, and then the coaching conversation. When you link, wherever on the bottom of that triangle, then once you guys link, then you walk up the middle of that triangle together. You know, we get your means in place. And those are your ways. And that's made kind of culturally agnostic, where we don't matter what culture we're from, we don't talk and everything now. I'm culturally astute or what have you. And then also, I used the word empowerment when I wrote the book, but, you know, some people take misconstrue that term also, like this triangle and the pyramid. So I like to use the term now enable or encourage, you know, in an organization where, which I won't have a flat organization. So flat is no good. You have to empower people. They have to be elevated and flat. So you do that through democratic leadership, through servantship, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the tools. Those are my ways for now, both my leader, because I'm going to continue to learn as a leader from that, from the aspiring leader. Then we're going to walk in lockstep, you know, in sync all the way to the top of this triangle. Then once we're at the top of that triangle, the zenith, the organization was at its optimal position. The coach, a leader, and the aspiring leader, all the optimal position, all three of us. Then that's a closed loop system. And now, as the leader or the coach, I can walk away and I can feed that aspiring leader back into my
position. Right, because you know that they're going to continue.
They're going to continue. And that's why I look at situational leadership. If you look across the situational leadership model, it's what are you? Are you a director, supporting, coaching, or you are delegated to this? I said, it's a continuum. I said, I start out as directing because I don't know that person. Once we get to know each other, then I become more coaching, more two-way conversation. Then a little further into the game, I'm supporting them. Hands off. At some point, I done built the new me, you know, the next aspiring leader. So now it's the game, you know, I sit back and relax and just watch them. But that one, my father was a publicist. That's what the word I was trying to get.
That was it. Yes.
Yeah, publicist. But that's how that triangle works, though, you know. And in that way, if you use my model, it doesn't matter what someone's beliefs and values are. They can go to an organization, take that model, and they can keep, you know, the process going, you know, through sustaining, you know, whatever initiative they had in place there. And there are some tools I used when I was in command that elevated my organization to, you know, battle efficient, you know, ships. And I had tons of sales that was just really had the highest promotion rate while in the Navy 1 year when I was out in Japan. And the last thing I had one sailor, what was unheard of, became Sailor of the Year.
I read that. I was like, oh my gosh. And it was really a woman.
A woman, yes, yes, yeah. So it's really unheard of someone coming from a ship, but I always put emphasis, you know, within the organization, within the crew. I would take what they call a instructors to the, you know, to see what means so the kids can get education, get opportunities to grow while it was there. Because you can't get that time back, but at least you can grow professionally. Then some PACE instructors say, well, the Navy don't really put, you know, emphasis on the kids having opportunities. I'm out there, I'm just sitting there doing nothing because the kids are working so hard they don't get a chance to go to class. I swear, well, that's up for me right there. I'm going to make sure that I provide the opportunity for them to go to class. And I said, they almost like going what you were saying earlier about Dion. If a kid misses class because they boss or whoever supervisor said they had work, and they need to come through me because that's a priority. We have 24 hours out here a day on this ship. There's no reason the kid can't go to class for a couple hours there. So that was the kind of things I think you have to really do, you know, to make sure that you're doing right and putting the tools in place. And my command philosophy, I talk about, you know, professional development, people talk about communication, just good practices. And I kept it consistent. I said, if you want to see me read my command philosophy, that's who I am. You know, if someone getting in trouble, you're not doing right, you're not taking care of your people, then we're going to go before our disciplinary board with this philosophy here. We're going to read it. And did you do the things in here? If you did what was in here, then we're fine. But if you don't, then, you know, you just a process file. So I kept things pretty simple and practical for the crew. And and it worked out. It just made being a captain really, really, really pleasant, you know.
Right. Yes. I love that, you know, and but I love the continual learning that you encouraged, you know, because in so many businesses, and I don't care, you know, what size they are, you know, they say, oh, we don't have, say, you know, a scholarship program or an education incentive or even internal training because we don't want them to get so smart that they leave.
One of those are the pressing issues we have in this world, or I call leadership upside down. You know, you got a lot of people, actually lots of people, and they fear people. They don't want to teach them because they're afraid they're going to displace them. But it goes back to Maslow hierarchy of needs. You know, you have to be actualized and feel comfortable where you are in order to do well in those positions. And you mentioned earlier point about the leader there, you know, what is really the leader? You know, they got to be someone who's really, really confident in who they are so they can look out for the best interests of others. So, and you don't have those, you know, those personal attributes. It's a little challenging. That's why I call this upside down model, where you got people in leadership positions that's not capable of leading and also standing on the shoulders of the people they surround them by. And I did ask a business owner once, I said, I want to do a scratch survey to see where you are strategically, you know, with your people and make sure what your strategy and what they're doing is alignment. You know, that's one thing. Now we have to do strategic thinking and strategic acting in the same space. Now we have to co-create. He said, I don't want to train my next competition. I said, everything in life is about risk. You know, you can't look at it that way. It's your next competition. Just give a person an opportunity to go out there. But if you do right by people and you go on stuff that they embrace, they'll stick with you. You know, people, they leave jobs now because, you know, they're not just there for compensation or whatever. You got to be something
they leave because
about.
Of bad management.
Bad management. Yeah. It's got to be something they're passionate about. And you got to, you got to connect with them, you know. And that's another piece I've been doing this. I said, you got to act to connect there. So sometimes, you know, in this whole optimal book, I'm just reading with Daniel Goleman. So, you know, now you have to show warmth, you know, before competency, you know. So I emphasize that. And I got this process because it was at this DEI world. So it really ain't about DEI now, because it's, first, there's too many terms there. People take those terms and twist it around and find something negative. Now, let's just connect and appreciate people. That's my why. We got to, you know, act like we all belong, you know. So I said, how do you act, though? You know, I mean, so how do you connect? I said, you got to do it through an act. And my acting is, first, you got to show appreciation. You have to communicate. And you have to demonstrate trust. And that allows you to connect. You have to be transparent in that regard. So,
yes. You know, and you mentioned DEI, and you talk about, you know, working with different cultures in your book. And I think that's so important because, first of all, you know, the world is a big melting pot, right?
It
and
is,
if we just focus on one certain demographic, then how can we serve others? You know, and but more importantly, we have to have others around us and learn from them. You know, and but you have to recognize it. And you talk in your book about the fact that one of the things we have to understand is what those differences are, because sometimes we have to change maybe how we're going to communicate with them. And, you know, and I think of it in a lot of ways, you know, more along the lines of age, because like, for me, I like email. Email's good. Voicemail's good too. Somebody a lot younger likes text, right? You know, and so if I'm going to, you know, and it gets a little complicated when you're dealing with team members that, you know, you've got, you know, a lot of different, because this person might need a text, this person, you know, might need a phone call, this person. But if you're a good leader, you're going to communicate with them in the way that they communicate best.
100% accurate. You know, and that's why I use the culture intelligence, you know, that's tied into that chapter. That comes, you know, as one thing on Navy, I would say, go back and look at the sail of the Great White Fleet, right? We go around where we do diplomacy. That's, you know, that's what the Navy, you know, we, that's the only service, not knocking the other service that the Constitution requires, to stand in Navy. You know, the rest of the service is standing up during wartime. But it has a lot to do with diplomacy and keeping the sea lanes open and deterrence, you know.
You like to never have to actually do warfare.
That's what President Kennedy, that was his motto. He said, my forces should be so sufficient, I should never have to fire a shot. So that you and I, when I was a young ensign, my first captain, I would do the West Africa training cruise. And he would take an officer from the wardroom, young ensign, you know, in fact, I have a picture in my book in Nigeria, Lagos. So he would take us on his calls, you know, and teach us diplomacy, teach us different cultures. And I, that's one reason I wrote this book, because I felt that how as a Navy, we go throughout these countries and we do a lot of different teamwork. We go do community relations stuff, you know, team building, you know, a lot of different active sporting events and a goodwill project. And then before we operate, we have to understand their culture, because the words don't mean the same in every culture. So you go in and you engage and interact with people. And so that way, when you come together to operate, we're all on the same page. And that's always important, even if it meant spending a couple of days in ports, going to events. So I went to Shanghai, China, Back when I was opening this work commanding out of Japan, they took me to their culture dance, you know, they took me to, you know, and they were like, I know America is, you know, always a democratic society. Mm-hmm. They were a little on the communist, you know, on mm-hmm. side, but they was really trying to, you know, transition, but right. at least they wanted us mm-hmm. to understand their perspective mm-hmm. and whether mm-hmm. we understand their perspective. And that's how you have, that's definitely mm-hmm. a piece about connecting. You don't mm-hmm. need it to have a waypoint, no matter where you are. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes right. we take that for granted mm-hmm. in our own country. I think sometimes we judge people and measure them based on mm-hmm. the, you know, the little rice bowls or this, just, you know, mm-hmm. the small space that we live right. in. So, and also what cross generations, I've been doing a lot of studying recently mm-hmm. on the different generations. And, you know, if you look at the Generation X, you know, that that took place, I think, from 45 to 65. And I'm sorry, the baby
younger.
Boomers. Baby mm-hmm. boomers, yeah, you had traditions. Mm-hmm. Well, they had the boomers mm-hmm. from 45 to 65, and then you went from 65 to 83 is Generation X, which is my generation. And I was looking at, mm-hmm. you know, the millenniums mm-hmm. that goes from, what, 83 to 98, and then from 98 up mm-hmm. to the late.
They're the Y? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I get lost in all of it.
It's the Y. It's a Z. Millennials and Y are the same. Now it's a Z. They call them the COVID generation. So I studied them really closely to understand how to interact with them, because they do things differently. But, you know, we just have to know how to appreciate them. They work just as hard as we work. You know, they get exposed to a lot of different, you know, aspects. They don't want to be lectured to. They just mm-hmm. want us to be right. role models mm-hmm. and set examples. But they are just as is not more viable than we are. Mm-hmm. We just have to understand mm-hmm. how to relate. You know, I was in a residential course when I was doing my doctorate, and I overheard someone's fellow classmate said, you know, it was in the medical field. I just wish I put older people that's been around in this room and the other ones in that room. I said, why? Because I don't want to say I'm bigger back and forth. I said, no, that's not the way to do it. I said, they both got something to offer each other. I said, sir, you're positioning you in, you got to facilitate that, you know, and so that's not the way to do it. You know, it was separating them out. So, had them to appreciate each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
You know, and as you said, learning is, you know, always, it's just ongoing. You know, and from a business perspective, we have to learn to, you know, work with other cultures. I, you know, before we moved here, I taught at Metro State University in Denver, and I taught communications, right? Makes sense. Okay. And I remember one of the students, and this was, you know, one of the classes where we had it was really pretty diverse. And the cool thing about Metro State was it was a commuter college, so no dorms. But it meant that we had kids that were 18 and students that were 65, 70 years old. And so it was fun. I really loved it. But I remember we were talking with this young man, and I had him give a presentation to the class, and he was Japanese. And he's, you know, one of the things we were talking about was business protocol. And he said, you know, what an American does, if you hand them the business card, we don't even look at it. We just toss it aside, right? Or we stick it in a pocket if we're at a networking thing or whatever. And he said that's very bad in Japanese culture, because the business card is an extension of them. Yeah. And so when you're given a business card, you should. And it's funny because now I've learned that this works with everybody, right? And it's actually even better. So you take it and you look at it and you read it. And you honor it, and then you put it, you don't cram it into your pocket or anything like that. You place it in a place of honor. And for me, one of the things that taught me was, okay, I'm really gonna, whoever it is, whatever culture or any of that, I'm gonna read their name, I'm gonna read their company, I'm gonna read their title, and it's gonna sink in a little bit more.
Exactly.
You know, and so, but I love that, because it was something that he taught us that then went everywhere.
That's it is critically important. And I have been in interact with mm-hmm. different cultures, and that's mm-hmm. very, very true. And they're very formal mm-hmm. when they pass you the card, mm-hmm. and you should be very,
right.
you should be similar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and as you just tuck it away, you should tuck away in mm-hmm. something that's real formal, mm-hmm. you know, after you do take a mm-hmm. close look at. So that's mm-hmm. great. Some of these things, it's been a while since I've done, so thanks for getting me up to speed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of the other things we learned, and of course, now I don't remember some of them. Like different colors mean different things in different
yes.
cultures.
Yes.
Green was one of the ones. You know, we tend to think of it here as green as in money. Yeah. But other cultures think of it as in earth, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and some, you know, and all sorts of things. And so I thought that was very fascinating to learn that. And yeah, I mean, the world is getting smaller and smaller. And I think especially because of COVID, we network with people from around the world every day and we don't have a second thought about it.
Yeah, you're right. We have to, it always bothered people. Like we go to other countries in the US and we expect everyone to speak English. And,
right.
It's offensive sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do we have those expectations? Mm-hmm. But you're right. We have to not learn how mm-hmm. to be so ethnocentric, and mm-hmm. Be respectful and honest to other people's right. positions or dispositions. Yes.
Well, and they, we might not be perfect, but they're going to appreciate the effort. When I went to Italy, I learned a very small smattering yeah. of Italian. I mean, like I could ask where the bathroom was, right? That's a really yes. important thing. And some other things. But they told me how much they appreciated that I was trying to make the effort.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great fun. And we waved a lot and gestured a lot. And every once in a while, I got the wrong thing that I ordered. Yeah. And, it was like, don't think that's what I wanted. But, it's what I said. I had potato chip pizza. That was very interesting. Somewhere I messed something up when I ordered.
Well, I was in Guam 2 weeks ago and I would go to the gym every morning. And these young girls were at the front desk. And I learned a couple where I had to say hello. I said, mm-hmm. half a day. Mm-hmm. Then every time I go in there, I was bushing it up. And they said, mm-hmm. no, it's half a day. I said, okay, I'm trying. Mm-hmm. So I practice every morning I go in there. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, now we're going to show you how to say thank you. So then I was able to teach. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I can't remember what they taught me, but they mm-hmm. just made them so excited. Mm-hmm. They were so mm-hmm. happy to see me every right. morning. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a little speech lesson mm-hmm. when I walked through the gym. And it was, that's good. I think the fact that I had interest, it really, right.
It shows excited. Respect.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that you're honoring them and honoring their culture, and I think that's just so important.
Yes.
Well, when I was reading your bio, obviously incredibly accomplished. What are the things that you are the most proud of?
We talk, right, about making people better, mm-hmm. and I always ask people every day, ask yourself, what can you do to make those people around you better? In the same fashion that Kennedy always said, what you do, to stand up for something that's bigger than mm-hmm. yourself. So it's really about people. What makes me really proud is when I see people that I have impacted mm-hmm. and I see them doing well. And most of them are doing better than I am, mm-hmm. For it's ascending the ladder. Mm-hmm. And I felt that's how life should be. Mm-hmm. It's like my parents made right. it better for me.
It's
and
better I each am, time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I am who I am because of my parents. They were unselfish. They wanted their kids to have more opportunities, mm-hmm. more resources. No, they didn't fully indulge us. Mm-hmm. They taught us lessons to grow. And I have over 25 of my understudies, and some of them was tough when they was with me because they didn't get it at first, but mm-hmm. they're doing so well now. They always reach out, and just tell me the difference that I made in their life. I've had kids and people I'm still influencing around the community every day, and that's what I'm really makes me proud. And just mm-hmm. like now, that's why I do the Champion Organization Wellness for one respect. And then my six-skill consultant is about mm-hmm. people, valuing people mm-hmm. skills, getting to know people, mm-hmm. Vice, all the stereotypes or false, perceptions of people. So that's what really makes me happy, being able to reach people and seeing mm-hmm. people grow and continue to do well in life. So that's what keeps me afloat, I would like to say.
I love it. Well, you retire from the military and you start a business. So tell us a little bit more about Six Gear Consulting. How'd you name it that?
It's common sense, six sense, right? Mm-hmm. So I was at Joint Forces Staff College. We had to get joint qualified as military officers around about the height of other services operating. So we did a thesis. It was an 11-week course. And you have to do a thesis that's throughout. The Navy is, as I always say, real. We're replete with leadership modeling. I recall I was in Air University at Montgomery when 9/11 hit. I was sitting next to a Tunisian, an officer from one of the African countries. Mm-hmm. And we talk about all the different leadership modeling. So I had done so much on leadership. I said, I'm going to do a thesis on something a little bit different. 9/11 and a half. And I said, I want to do interorganizational relationships. Ah. What did that really mean? How mm-hmm. do people really communicate? I remember the days when the inception of computers aboard ships and people walk right past you and they wouldn't say anything. They go send you mm-hmm. an email. They wouldn't take it. They sent it.
Right.
So I said, you know what? I'm just going to turn all the computers off one day so mm-hmm. force people to talk. That was just me thinking.
Oh, no.
I didn't have the power to do that. But we cannot neglect technology. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at 9/11, it was just tons of information mm-hmm. portals that was out there. Mm-hmm. But what did we apply? And I mm-hmm. like to use the example, like, say you got the captain of the ship and you got one of the the deck plate workers, right? Mm-hmm. So if the deck plate worker walk aboard the ship and you happen to go send you an email and say, mm-hmm. hey, we got a fire in this this particular space. Mm-hmm. And the captain may say, hey, you know, I had a good time, you know, riding my bike over the weekend. Who email are you going to read? It's going to mm-hmm. be the captain, right? But the ship's mm-hmm. going to burn down, right? Mm-hmm. So now how do you determine what information you really apply, mm-hmm. you know? And so we got tons of it out there. So it's the application information. So I said this whole 6-year thing is it's about common sense, mm-hmm. putting the people back into the loop. And also a couple of our warships, we got an automatic weapon system. Mm-hmm. And I can go in there, hit one button, the ship will fight itself, but it's going to shoot. It's going to shoot mm-hmm. indiscriminately.
Mm-hmm. And, right, because the rest of the pieces weren't there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's going to run out of weapons before mm-hmm. you really can. And go probably put extra amount of mm-hmm. weapons. So we had a finite number of weapons. So we always hit man in the loop. So mm-hmm. I got to put man back in the loop. I got to put sixth sense back mm-hmm. into the mm-hmm. loop here. But I said, but I don't want to be a Neanderthal, though. I want to make sure that I'm going to be on the information highway, but I want to go to mm-hmm. sixth gear. I use sixth sense. I want to put my car in overdrive so I don't burn people skills.
Okay.
Excess fuel. Mm-hmm. So that's what this whole mm-hmm. sixth gear and this common sense thing is about, really trying to put, you know, the man back into the system. Mm-hmm. I had this concept, I think, well, in 2017 now. So it's been 7 years. And see a lot of stuff on artificial intelligence now and mm-hmm. a lot of metadata, a lot of pieces is coming mm-hmm. around now. It was ties back into this, what I was thinking then. Now I'm being able to apply it more. And just because of some of the, you know, stuff we're saying with ChatGPT and mm-hmm. certain systems, you know, you got this piece called the OODA loop they use mm-hmm. and these closed loop systems. And, you know, you get information is everywhere. Data is just people overwhelmed with data. So how do you make sense of that data? How do you mm-hmm. analyze? It's got to be the human mm-hmm. at some point. You got to inject this human being into right. all of these different artificial mm-hmm. intelligence tools in order to make sense of them, in order to properly mm-hmm. orientate yourself, in order to pull the right information. So that's what 6 years really about. It's really just teaching the basic ground root people mm-hmm. skill, blocking and tackling, you know, mm-hmm. eye contact, tone of voice, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, the old fashioned way of mm-hmm. communicating and valuing the human.
Right.
I teach British resource management now. For the military senior level command, and that's what we talk about, soft skills and team building. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this book Goldman and Tierney, they talk about social intelligence nowadays is actually more powerful than technical mm-hmm. skills, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what people looking at on jobs is they're mm-hmm. hiring now.
Mm-hmm.
So it just really, you know, came about it at the right time there, mm-hmm. but it's really to link people. It's about the sixth sense comes, mm-hmm. you know. And also valuing technology. Mm-hmm. So that's the gist right. of it. Yes. Right.
You know, and it is more of a challenge now because like you and I right now, we're talking on Zoom. So, you know, we can get a little of our body language, you know, some things like that. But, you know, we are missing some of it.
Yes.
Because, you know, like, and as little kids, that's one of the things we learn, you know, mom's mad, you know, and mom didn't say a word, but we knew mom was mad, right? You know, danger, danger. And you just hope she wasn't mad at you. But, you know, it's all of those extra things, even just like tone of voice. You know, how many times we do it every day, right? You read a Facebook post, an email message, something, and you put a different spin on it than the person who wrote it. You know, you make it funny. They meant it to be serious. They meant to be devil's advocate, all of these things. And, you know, but when we're actually in a room speaking to somebody, or, you know, this is not bad, you can pick up a little bit more on that. But I think that's one of the things we're always going to need the people, you know, for everybody who is fussing about AI, it still needs people to be there. I don't want one to drive my car. I mean, you know,
no,
I just, I just don't trust it that much. But, you know, I do my blog posts using AI. I start them that way, but then I go back and I make
it
mine.
You tweak it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and things like that. And it was funny because I was talking with a friend of mine who has become an AI expert, right? In like 6 months. We've had AI for a long time. Anybody that doesn't understand, we've had it for a really long time.
Yeah.
Um, But she was saying that, so, you know, ChatGPT is basically Microsoft. I mean, you know, their search engine, they use Bing, all of those things. They're hiring more and more people to be actually the ones who were writing some of this stuff because it needed that personal touch. And, you know, and so you can, it's, you know, the AI goes out and gets the information, but then the person is who does the work and kind of tweaks it a bit. And I just love that concept.
Yeah. But what I always said in a nutshell, I have two pieces. I went through my department head school and surface warfare school in 1997, and the captain of the school came out, he addressed the class. He said, look, you guys need to really pay attention, take advantage of this opportunity to learn. It's going to always be an analog world. It'll never be a digital world. I always need man in the loop. And that was one piece. And we went to all these different digital models on the show. I was a damage control officer and chief engineer in my early years in the Navy in the late 90s. We started going to all these different communication tools and digital printouts. And I always said we had the old message track where you deliver messages as you do drills. But I said, look here, I said, this technology is great, but it's, I see it as a multiplier. It's not an enabler. I said enabler is the human being.
Right.
You have to always have the human element. So we enable this, but you can do a lot of nice stuff and take it to a maximum level, like I said, and multiply it with artificial intelligence. And I think since what you're just doing right there, though, you put your own, you enable and
yeah, I'm like process. That. I would not say that word. You know, so I change it to a word that I would use.
Yes, yes. So that's essentially what that's my take on it. Yes, you got that. We are enablers as human beings. You know, artificial intelligence technology is great. But and I remember when I studied robotics, it was to replace the 3Ds, dirty, dull, and dangerous. And I listened to Elon Musk's book. You know, he was like, you know, everyone want robots to do everything. You know, then they go out there and they go through trial and error, and they realize robot it can't do it. I use robots just to troubleshoot to see why I don't want to use it. You know, like putting the small little intricate, you know, windowsills around cars. And that's why you still got people in all these automobile manufacturers because once again, that was what I 1985 when I was studying robotics. I'm supposed to replace these dirty, dull, and dangerous semi-line workers. It hasn't done it yet, has it?
Right.
So, but it's enhancing it in Mother Planet, but it doesn't enable building automobiles. So I think that ties into, you know, where we are in that regard.
Right. Well, oh my gosh, Anthony, this has been fascinating. And we need to have a conversation again, because this is just so much fun. And we've just scratched the surface on all of this. And so I'd love to have you on again. But until then, tell us more about how do they find you? How do they work with you? And what are the services that you provide?
Yeah. Okay. Well, first I'm on my website. Please visit it, www.sixgearconsulting.com. And I'm there. And what Six Gear provides, I like to leadership coaching, as we talked about quite often here. And also I like team development and involvement. And listen to those words very closely, because most people talk team building, but you got to build individuals first. So you got to develop your team, because everyone is different. You got to connect and link with them. So then you evolve the team. So I get that concept. Yeah, I call it talent management. Well, talent wellness, you know, how do you keep people there? And I like my tools. I got in my book, Champion Organization Wellness, Chapter 8. I was doing cross-functional training, coach protege modeling. And I had people from different backgrounds, different cultures to mentor each other. People bring their mentors to the performance reviews. And I did them more, you know, frequently than most organizations. So that's what the talent, you know, wellness is about, to keep people in place there. I mean, that way your performance appraisal is not a surprise. And the last piece is organization design and strategy. How do you build these models where you actually allow people to grow and be a part of where you can do strategic thinking and strategic acting in the same space and co-create solutions? Because we're in what we call these buckle environments. I have a guy with the Navy school with Mark Devine, and he came up this time. He's a Navy officer school when he's a SEAL, and he talked about buckle conditions and talked about volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous environments. So how do you turn those challenges into opportunities? And that's what my models are doing. And as things are so dynamic externally, you know, some of the tasks you're getting out in life, you have to be able to move swiftly. You got to do that through, you know, enabling people on your team, you know, to think at the same level you're at. So that's my concepts for my services. And like I said, they are available there on sixgearconsulting.com.
And six is spelled out, S-I-X.
S-I-X-E-X, gear, G-A-R, consulting.com.
I love it. And we'll link to that in the notes, and we'll link to your book also. Well, this really has been so fascinating. And, you know, this is why I set a timer, because if I didn't, you know, we'd miss dinner, right? So, you know, I do hope to have you on again. But until then, do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave everyone with?
No, I just like to tell people, you know, just every day, you know, wake up, ask yourself, what can you do to make the people around you better? And I would stay with that drum beat. And once you find your main thing, you just stick with your main thing, continue to communicate that message to people. And then learn how to act, you know, learn how to appreciate, communicate, and trust, so people feel like they're connected and belong to your organization. So my why is for people to really appreciate one another.
I love it. So much fun. Well, I'm Deb Creer. I've been having a great discussion with Dr. Anthony Simmons, formerly of the Navy. Again, thank you so much for your service. He is now the founder and president of Sixth Gear Consulting. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.